You're listening to The Andrew Miller Show. This episode, we're talking with Michael Badges Canning, Green Party candidate for Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. Michael currently serves as the mayor of Cherry Valley, Pennsylvania. That's in Butler County. He's a retired teacher, was a union member throughout his working life, serving as president, vice president, and building representative in his local. Since retirement, he's been an organizer in the fracking climate fight locally, statewide, and nationally. He also serves on the board of several community organizations. Let's hear what he has to say. Hello, Michael Bagnus Canning. Welcome to the program. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Fantastic. So what motivated you to run for Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania?
Yes, a whole lot of things, really. I mean, I'm sort of a reluctant candidate in that, I'm 60. I'll be 69 in August.
All right.
And I don't think that the face of the Green Party in particular should be a 69-year-old guy. I thought it should be somebody else. But a friend of mine, I know her as PK, but her real name's Christine. Is running for governor, and it was also held out to me that this would be an opportunity to energize the Greens in Pennsylvania, to get them to organize better so that we can compete for some races in 2021, which is when we have our local elections for things like boroughs and cities and towns and that kind of stuff. And I'm an organizer at heart for the last 11 years, and that I like the challenge of doing that. Plus I like the idea that I was going to be running with PK. We're both disruptors, I like to think.
Nice. Yes, and I know you're currently a mayor, correct?
I am. Yeah, I live in Cherry Valley Borough, which is a tiny borough in northern Butler County in the western part of Pennsylvania. I've been involved in local government since 1989. Wow. I served on the borough council, and we had a mayor, really good guy, a friend of mine, Ron Lockwood. He was mayor for 51 years, and he died suddenly in December of COVID.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it sucked. He was a hell of a guy, but anyway, they needed someone to replace him, and I guess I was the guy.
All right. And before mayor, you've held elected office before that, right?
Yeah, I've been, like I said, involved in local government since 1989. Yep. On the borough council before I was mayor, I was Cherry Valley Borough's vice president. I mean, I've also run for other offices too, but that office I've held since 1989.
Oh, wow. And were you a Green the whole time, or did that decision come along later?
Yeah, I've been a Green since 2009.
Okay.
And that was a response to Obama. I was a Democrat for 42 years, a hold your nose Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never...
I would say that's most of them.
I wish.
Yeah.
I was all in for Obama. I thought hope and change. I believed that shit. I don't know if I can say that on your.
You can
believe
you,
that stuff.
What the hell you want?
Okay, yeah. I believe that. And then he turned out to be just more of the same. So, at that point, I mean, I remember the breaking point was he released a budget. It might have been in early 2010, but he released a budget. And one of the things in that budget was subsidies for NASCAR and a cut in the low-income home energy assistance program. Ooh. And I thought, what the heck? And so yeah. I started looking into that budget, and it was like, no, I can't be part of this anymore. So, yeah, that's when I became a Green.
Oh, yeah. And it's good that you noticed that because, yeah, there'll be – a lot of, like, as you said, he used to be a hold your nose Democrat. And a lot of people who still identify as Democrat or vote that way, if they saw a Republican do that exact same thing, they'd be all over it. And they'd say, ah, this is why they have to be voted out. And the only way to vote them out is to vote Democrat. But then what happens? Who do you see doing the same thing? And then, you know, those same people who would have been all loud about it if it was a Republican doing it are pretty silent about it when it's a Democrat doing the same exact thing. And, you know, bad is bad regardless who does it, not depending on who does it. That's how I like to see it.
Yeah, I mean, and that was a realization I had in 2009 was that I was complicit in that. You know, I was voting for Democrats, but not holding them accountable because, you know, they weren't those horrible Republicans. But then I realized, no, they really are.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
they're just enablers.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, one thing that can make them even worse is the fact that not everybody sees them coming. Whereas, as you say, oh, those horrible Republicans. Yeah, but at least we all see them coming miles away. Yeah, so it's important that people see both coming miles away and then knowing really how to weigh it out and decide, yeah, what is it that you don't like about that one party? And if you see the other party is doing the exact same thing, then, you know, we have to get real.
Now, I think a lot of people struggle with the whole notion, you know, that they're enabling the bad guys if they vote for. I hear it all the time. You know, I voted for name your green, whoever it is, or name your independent party, independent voter or third party voter. Name, and they'll say, oh, you're just helping elect Trump, or you're helping elect. Yeah, and that was that. You know, at first that not at first, but for probably 42 years that was how I operated. You know, I don't want to enable those nasty Republicans to get in. But then after 2009, it dawned on me, you know, I don't want to vote against my fears. I want to vote for my aspirations. And so that's been my definition. And I don't feel guilt at all for voting for what I want. So.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Because if you vote for what you don't want, you know, then and it happens, you know, that's still blood on your hands then. And that's why I'm a firm believer in voting your conscience. That's why I have this program to make people more aware of these options too. And I understand when I was on the Green Party's website, I was reading about, you know, something taking place around where you live, like, you know, permits, you know, for fracking, was it, or a controlling station or something to that effect?
Oh, we have. Yeah, that happened about 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
You're talking about the same thing I'm talking about. But I mean, to me, It's very immediate. I think about it all the time. And it's one of the stories I tell over and over and over again, because it was highly illustrative of where I think we need to go. And that's actually helping to define the campaigns that we are putting together for governor and lieutenant governor. And that was that, you know, I'm an organizer, anti-fracking climate organizer in Butler County. And so when bad things happen, I get phone calls. And one of the things was this one morning, I got a call from a mother, and she was telling me that there was this well that was on fire right behind Summit Elementary School in Butler Township. So I drove down, and it wasn't on fire. It was flaring, but that's still alarming as hell, because flaring dumps all kinds of stuff into the air. And this particular well was 700 feet from the school, 500 feet from the playground where the kids were going to be having their phys ed class. And so it alarmed me. And I, you know, I made a bunch of calls. I talked to some health professionals. I got them to write up a thing. I talked to the school district, whatever. But like I said, I'm an organizer. So my next impulse was, let's find out what the people in the neighborhood think. And so I started knocking on doors. And this one particular interaction I had at a mailbox changed my life, really. And that was, I met this woman. She was at her mailbox. I said hello, and I asked her, you know, what she thought of the well and, you know, what the neighbors were saying. And she said something along the lines of, oh, we have a great neighborhood here. I've lived here for 42 years. We all get along really well, but we don't talk about the tough stuff. And, you know, that really jumped out at me, but I don't think it really struck me until much later. But anyway, we had the conversation and I'm touching base with her about a bunch of stuff. And then I start walking away and she calls after me and she says, "What can we do? They're so big and we're so small." And that just like, it ripped my heart out. It's like, holy shit, what have we become? First of all, there's this toxic monster next to the school where we send our children and our neighbors, the teachers and the staff there, we send them there and they're having to breathe this stuff all day long. And we don't even talk about that. You know, that to me indicates that our communities have broken down, that we don't communicate the way we're supposed to. And then the other thing that struck me is this, what can we do? They're so big and we're so small. Again, we have, you know, we Americans like to pride ourselves on being, you know, this mighty democracy. And yet we don't even think we have the power to, and we don't, I mean, we really don't have the power to control this monster next to our schools. So after that, I thought this is wrong. We need to fix this. And so, yeah, that was a powerful moment for me.
Oh, wow. And then, I read something where the permit for it ended up getting denied.
Well, not that. Okay,
It was
a different thing. Yeah, it was a different thing. And again, this was a really big lesson for me because something did change. And that was the mother who had called me about the well was very engaged. And she and I started talking about what she could do about this well. Well, then she found out they were going to put a compressor station in very close to the school too.
Now, that's
a
compressor what I was station, mentioning.
Yeah,
yes.
A compressor station is this thing that takes the gas, compresses it, and then shoots it down a pipeline. But it also spews all kinds of crap into the air too. And so she went around knocking on doors. You know, I helped her some, but she did a lot of it on her own. And then, like 3 months later, she invited me to come to this supervisor's meeting, township supervisor's meeting, to watch the fruit of her labors. And there was a huge crowd there. The supervisors were obviously shook because they aren't used to having anybody there. And people were testifying and saying how horrible it was. And then right at the end, this little old lady walks up to the microphone and she starts talking, and I recognize her. It was that woman that I had met at the mailbox, and she talked about the tough things. I mean, she really did. She talked about what we were doing to our children, what we were doing to our neighborhood, and then she finished and she turned around and she looked at me and she smiled. I mean, and to me, that was a power. And then, like you said, the supervisors rejected the permit for that compressor station. So to me, that was like, yeah, this is what we need to do. We need to organize our communities so that we are powerful. We can do stuff if we organize.
Exactly. And, you know, that's proof of it, of course. And also brings me to another thing. I know I've brought this up when I've interviewed many Greens over the past year or so, is that, you know, when it hits home, when it hits the community, that's when all of a sudden everybody becomes environmentalist and cares about these things. Like people who aren't affected by it, you know, some care, a lot don't, even with the whole fracking issue. Like where I live, it's probably easy for a lot of people to be indifferent about it because it's not happening in their backyard or next to the school they send their kids. And it's easy for, you know, other people I know to think, oh yeah, we're going to own the libs by allowing fracking and just, you know, ridiculous opinions. But that's easy for them to say when it's not their faucet water that could light on fire, like in that documentary Gasland. Because if it was, then they'd be at that town meeting you're talking about with their pitchforks, you know, torches, whatever, you know, in groups saying, hey, you know, I don't want my kids, you know, dying of this, or hey, I don't want to, you know, I'm lighting my faucet water on fire. This is unacceptable. Or I don't want to have to travel somewhere to buy a bunch of bottled water and bring it home and then have to like limit it within a certain amount of time, whatever the case is.
Yeah, well, the thing is, and I think we're in a pivotal time. The IPCC report just came out and it basically said we have a very limited opportunity to act. So that's not talking about my community. That's talking about the whole damn planet and the human race and all the other life on this planet. So, yeah, I mean, this thing affects all of us. And then the other thing that I want to talk about, you know, with that, you know, you said you live in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, in New Jersey, you got all kinds of issues too. There's an incinerator near, what the heck's it? I can't even think of the town now. Newark. It's near Newark, and they burn trash, and it's called renewable energy. And yet it spews all kinds of garbage into the air. We have another one in Pennsylvania, in Chester, same company, Covanta. They take trash there, and it's spewing air, all kinds of toxins in the air. The people in that community, and Newark too, are dealing with, you know, depressed property values. But worse, they're dealing with like some of the highest asthma rates in the whole country. They have cancer clusters and all this stuff. So, you know, we're all downstream. We're all downstream. So many, we have plastic circulating in our system. All of us, we can't help it. It's everywhere. So, you know, there's nowhere we're not impacted by this, but with climate change in particular, we are really impacted.
Oh, wow. And what other issues facing Pennsylvania do you think need to be dealt with, or that you and PK would deal with if elected?
Well, again, I think that the article where you became aware of me was talking about what it is we're hoping to accomplish. And we're not going to be elected. We know that. The electoral system in Pennsylvania and everywhere else is broken. No, it's not. I shouldn't even say it's broken. It's not broken. It's fixed the way the ruling class wants it to be fixed. We are not going to win. But what we want to do is we want to energize folks on the grassroots level to become engaged, like that older woman in Summit Township. We want them to become engaged in the fight. We don't have time to be screwing around. So there's that issue for sure. That's probably our biggest issue. We want to run on the notion that we're energizing a movement. We're not going to win this thing, but we're going to energize movement. But then the other things that we also want to be able to point out, a lot of things that are wrong in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a corrupt state. We have no gift ban in Pennsylvania. So lobbyists can give and do give our politicians all kinds of stuff, and there's no limits. They can do all kinds. They get sent to Europe on wine tasting trips. They get Super Bowl tickets. They get housing in Harrisburg, you know, the free of charge. They get meals every day. They can, in Harrisburg, they can eat for free because lobbyists take care of this stuff. Yeah. It's horrible. So that's one thing. Point out the corruption. We're calling on our government officials to implement a gift ban those damn gifts. You know, it shouldn't be that lobbyists can buy access and our legislators, the ones that we elect, that we call our representatives, don't represent us. They represent the people that are gifting them. So let's get that on the ballot, or not on the ballot. Let's get that through the gate. The bill's already there, but it's being ignored by both parties. Specifically though, because the Republicans control both houses in Pennsylvania, it's being held up by Representative Benninghoff and Senator Cormann. But when the Democrats are in charge, they didn't pass it either. So it's not like it's either party's not to blame. They're both to blame, and they both benefit. We'd also like to reform our electoral system, period. You know, big things like, you know, ranked choice voting would be nice. That would allow folks like BK and me to actually compete on a relatively level playing field. But no, how about things like limiting the amount of money that can go into a campaign? I think I alluded to earlier, I ran for office in 2020. I ran as a Green against an incumbent. Republican representative. I was the only other candidate in the race.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it really was nice. It was an eye opener for me there too. But he had three contributions into his campaign account, and two of them were from a large banking lobby, and the other one was from Energy Transfer Partners, which is the people behind the Keystone Pipeline, behind the one at Standing Rock, and behind the Mariner East Pipeline that runs the length of Pennsylvania. So. Why is that? Why? How the hell can we allow that kind of stuff to go on? So let's get rid of that money and corporate money for politicians. You and I talked before we started this. You know, I live in a rural area. Our infrastructure sucks. My internet is called high speed. The FCC says that 25 megabits per second download speeds is basic internet service. And that's supposed to be the bottom line. Mine on a good day is 3.4 megabits per second. So I'm not even 1/8 of the total that they say is basic, but I'm good compared to some of my neighbors. When COVID hit and children were going to remote schooling,
yeah,
we had kids in my neighborhood, in my school district, who had to be driven, whatever, their parents had to take them to the high school parking lot to access the school's internet because they had no internet service whatsoever. There was nothing even available to them.
Wow.
So that needs to be fixed. Another thing that needs to be fixed is, you know, we live in Pennsylvania. It's a Rust Belt state. In places like mine, we bleed jobs and young people. There's nothing to keep our young people here because the jobs are no longer here. We need to fix that. I would love to see us invest in a Green New Deal. You know, our housing stock here is old. We need to bring that up to snuff so we aren't burning so many fossil fuels. It'd be even better if we weren't burning any fossil fuels. How about investing in that kind of stuff? There's another issue right off the top of my head. Shoot, I got all kinds of things in my head, but I'm not thinking of them.
There's so much.
Yeah, well, there is. There absolutely is. And we're not getting it because the ruling class doesn't want us to get it. They are much rather interested. They're much more interested in, oh, I know, another one is subsidizing, the planet-killing industries in Pennsylvania. You know, we subsidize our oil and gas industry. We gave enough money to Shell, Royal Dutch Shell, which is not even a country company from Pennsylvania. We subsidize them so much so that they can open this nasty cracker plant, and I'll talk about what that is in a second, and run it for 25 years on our dime.
Oh, wow.
But we were in a bidding war with Ohio and West Virginia, so we offered the best deal. So we give them $25 of gifts. So they'd come here and create some jobs, not many jobs, but some jobs. But the cracker plant is, again, a climate killing investment. And it takes the gas liquids from places like where I live in Butler County. We have wet gas. They take the gas liquids. They take those gas liquids and they ship them to this cracker plant where they crack the methane and its parts apart. And then they create the basic building blocks for plastic. Like, we need more plastic. So again, why are we investing in that? Why aren't we investing in local businesses? Why aren't we investing in local infrastructure?
Yeah. You know,
Pennsylvania, again, we made the front page a couple months ago. A bridge in Pittsburgh collapsed. You know why?
Ooh.
Because we've been neglecting our infrastructure for decades. Again, that needs to change. Let's invest in our economy and sustainable stuff, not in climate killing stuff.
Exactly. And then the fact that they're investing in all that climate killing stuff, I mean, just think where else they could have invested that to improve people's actual lives, even if it's a better transportation system, infrastructure, you name it.
Yeah, I mean, that's another great example. I have a neighbor, she died just recently, but she grew up in this area. And she told me, I live about 70 miles north of Pittsburgh, 80 miles south of Erie. But anyway, she told me that when she was a kid in the early part of the 20th century, she was able to catch a train from her hometown named Boyers to Pittsburgh to shop and come back that day. Today, if you live where I live and where she lives, we can't even get to grocery stores because of the Walmartization of rural areas. All of our small local economies have collapsed because places like Walmart and Amazon and other places have made it impossible for them to compete. So we can't even grocery shop without driving half an hour. We can't do a lot of things, buy building supplies or anything, because those things have moved away from us to such an extent that we have to have a car. And there's no public transit here. Forget that. So yeah, that's true too. Let's invest in local communities, not in these mega stores and whatnot. So yeah, whatever.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's an ongoing problem. Like there's some places where, like, 100 years ago had a better transportation system than they do now. Like when there used to be more trolleys, like in smaller, medium-sized cities even. And now it's, you either have to live like in or near New York City or, you better have a car. And then when gas prices go up, that doesn't make having a car much of a bargain either.
Well, that's true too. And then, again, we hear a lot about switching to electric vehicles. That's fine. But again, the infrastructure is not going to be in places where I live, not for a long time. And so let's fix that too. My electric comes from, Karen and I, we're both retired teachers. We built our house with the idea that it would be heated by the sun and would use a very little energy. So, when we built the house, that's what we had in mind. But when we got our electricity, we got it from the Rural Electric Cooperative. And again, that's kind of a pain because the Rural Electric Cooperative, it's owned by me. I'm one of the owners, but it's set up in such a way that they have to purchase their electric from some places far away, and they're burning fossil fuels. So again, why aren't we making local grids, investing in local grids, so that rural communities can be more not self-sufficient, but at least more reliant on local infrastructure? So yeah, absolutely. Wow.
And shifting gears a bit, I know civil liberties is a big thing with the Green Party. And I know on the site you did write a little piece about the war on drugs. How is Pennsylvania when it comes to that type of issue and their laws?
Well, it's terrible. We do have a drug problem. But again, I think it's entirely traceable to the fact that our kids have no future. So they medicate, they self-medicate. That's part of the problem. But the other thing is we have a draconian system for drugs, for actually for our prison system in general. One of the jobs, if I were elected lieutenant governor, would be I'd be the chair of the pardons board. In Pennsylvania, if you're sentenced to prison for life, you have no chance of parole, which I think is a horrible way to treat our neighbors. Maybe some people should be locked away. I don't know. I don't know many of those folks, but maybe some of them should. But I think there are also a lot of people that turn themselves around, or else they get so old that they are incapable of committing any crimes. And yet we keep them in prison until they die, which is wrong. So yeah, I would definitely legalize marijuana for sure. And other drugs. I mean, we have no business putting people in jail for drug things. We should be treating first. That should be our first priority. Portugal had the same kind of drug problems that we do. They had much of their budget went into it, but they changed their model from incarceration to treatment. And it's really turned things around. Let's rethink this thing. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And some states are slowly but surely catching on. My state, for example, just recently has. And yeah, I mean, I say, you know, treat it like alcohol, because where I live now, I'm walking distance to like a number of places where you could buy alcohol or be served alcohol. And guess what? You don't see drunk people walking around and driving everywhere and causing problems. So, you know, same thing applies to everything else.
Changing gears just a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
You asked me a long time ago why I ran. And again, it was one of these things, a convergence of things. Karen and I went on a mini vacation about 2.5 months ago, I guess. And we just happened to stumble into this this concert. A guy named David Mallett. He's a singer from, you know him?
No, I do
most
not.
Most people don't. Hey, you know, he's an old guy from Maine. Right. He's most famous for writing a song called The Garden Song, inch by inch, row by row. Anyway, yeah. He wrote that song, but he performed this song. It was called Celebration. And I mean, it was really an indictment of who we are and where we are right now. But one of the lines is, what you gonna do? What are you gonna do? You know, it's come down to me and you. And I really think that, to me, that was again something that I want to do. I want to get the idea that it's me and you, that we need to change this system, and that we need to start talking to our neighbors. And again, another story, again, a life-changing story for me was right after the state-sanctioned execution of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. I was part of a Black Lives Matter thing in DC in front of the Justice Department. And I'm there, we're marching around, chanting and everything. And I look up and I see an anti-fracker that I know, who also happens to be one of the he's a very fierce anti-fracker, but he's also a fierce Tea Party guy.
Oh, okay.
I was shocked to see him there. And so I walked over and I talked to him. And I said, I can't believe you're here. And he said something to me that really has resonated with me. And I think it sums up what I'm about to say. And that is that we need to talk to our neighbors. And that is, he said, Michael, you and I probably agree on 80% of things.
Yes.
Let's win those 80%. And then at our victory party, we can talk about the other 20%.
Exactly.
And 20% are not, it's not insignificant, but the ruling class wants us fighting about the 20%.
Exactly.
So they can screw us on the 80%.
Exactly.
And we need to work on that. So yeah. And again, just to reflect on myself, you know, I'm a Green Party guy elected to office for, I don't know, 30 some years. And I live in what is derisively called Trump country. You know, my neighbors are not the dumb rubes that they are often portrayed as. They are thinking people, and they've been screwed by both parties. They don't like the Republicans any more than they like the Democrats.
Yeah.
They hate both parties. That's my job. That's PK's job. That's our job as organizers, is to unite people, get them to start talking about the 80%, not the 20%.
Exactly. That's the only way to do it too. So before Zoom closes out on me in 2 minutes, is there anything else you'd like to plug real quick, or any way people could help your campaign?
Well, the campaign, if you live in Pennsylvania, we need signatures. The Democrats are going to try and screw us out of access to the ballot. We need to get 10,000 signatures. If you're in Pennsylvania, do that for sure. A second thing is, I just want to do a plug for something else I'm involved in. It's not necessarily part of the campaign, but it's related to what I was talking about.
All right.
And that is that we have on June 13th, we're going to do a thing in the Capitol in Harrisburg, where our legislators are likely going to arrest us because they don't want to hear the truth. Mm. And that is that they are corrupt as hell. So look up, I can't even think of what it is, the Climate Convergence, or reach out to me.
All right. Excellent. All right. Sounds good. So thank you for being on, and good luck this November. And good luck with the fight.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you so much. And thanks for doing this. This is an important thing you're doing.
Ah, thanks. You can read more about Michael Bagdis Canning at the Green Party's website, gp.org, and his state's own Green Party site as well. That is gpofpa.org. If you would like to join Michael Bagdis Canning's campaign for Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor, please contact him at M, as in Michael, BAGDES at gmail.com. mbagdis at gmail.com. MBAGDES at gmail.com. Also this year, be sure to sign petitions of candidates you like who are running in your area to be on the ballot if they haven't achieved the signature requirement by now. It's important to have more than just two choices who tend to answer to the same special interests and allow more options outside of that instead. Really, really got to mix it up, get more options out there. To find more Green Party candidates running in this year's general election, visit gp.org. If interested in finding candidates from the Libertarian Party in this year's election, you could find them at lp.org. Or for any other parties or independents running in your area, keep your eyes and ears peeled. There are sites like Ballotpedia and Vote 411 that can sometimes be helpful. This year is flying by, so don't wait until the end of October to all of a sudden care about this year's election. Also on that note, in the meantime, if you think it's just a matter of giving the nominations for the two major parties better candidates, there are primary elections this year. The National Conference of State Legislatures has all the primary election dates for every state. If you go online and visit ncsl.org. To hear more episodes of The Andrew Miller Show, future or previous, find The Andrew Miller Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms such as Radio Public, Pocket Casts, and Overcast. You can also follow The Andrew Miller Show on Facebook. Remember, let's move forward together, and for now, peace out.